you're not listening to this intro music with headphones on, you are doing it wrong. Oh, man. I crank that noise, baby. Yeah, I get it so loud. I'm going to go deaf. If I do this podcast for another 2 years, this intro music is going to make me go deaf. I guarantee it. It thumps. Oh, man. Shit be slapping. Sorry, Mom. Bienvenidos and welcome, everyone. I am Lauren Hutton, and you probably already knew that. Welcome to Lauren's podcast. I'm so sorry we missed last week. Not really. I didn't even notice. I was very focused on other things, and by other things, I mean these crazy, weird dreams I've been having lately. I don't know if it's stress or the fact that I quit smoking marijuana. Yep, that's right. Completely quit. Don't do that anymore at all. You may ask yourself, well, why? Why would you stop doing something that gave you so much, you know, relief and joy throughout so many years? Well, it stopped doing that. It's a common thing, man. People get later in their 20s and their early 30s, and all of a sudden, the wonderful God green-given herb that has given us so much relief from our anxiety and depression starts causing anxiety and depression. It doesn't happen to everybody. I mean, some people just keep right on smoking. And I don't know, maybe those people live in constant denial of their actual feelings because they're stoned all the time. Or maybe they don't like being able to find where they left the toilet paper. There's no reason for you to take the toilet paper anywhere else other than the bathroom and your car where you picked it up in. We're not out of toilet paper. We're never going to run out of toilet paper because I have a wonderful person that manages my household for me. Maybe it's because her name is on the mortgage. Maybe it's because she's a fully functioning adult. Either way, we got plenty of TP. I'm off on tangents. Can you really be off on a tangent if you never had a point in the first place? Good question. Let's dig into that. Anywho. These dreams, I've been having crazy dreams. I mean, like, weird, stress-filled dreams. I had a dream that my girlfriend fell in the shower. That was it. That was the whole dream. It was literally a play-by-play recap of everything that had happened that morning while she was getting ready to go to work. I got up with her to try and, like, you know, help her with a few things in the morning. Cat boxes and making coffee, you know, just trying to make sure that she gets her day started right. Sometimes I'm a considerate and thoughtful person to the person that I love the most, and sometimes I sleep in. But yeah, I helped her with some stuff, and then she left, and I laid back down, and I had a dream where all of the exact things that had just happened played out verbatim with the slight difference, just a little bit of like a sixth sense twist. She fell down in the shower. She was fine in the dream. She didn't actually fall down. I heard her fall down, and then I checked on her, and she was fine. That was the whole dream. That's when the stress dreams started. It was very mediocre. It was almost not worth mentioning on a podcast. I definitely wouldn't tell anyone at Kroger about it, even though I definitely did. And then they got worse. They continued to just get worse. I had a dream where I was in a love affair with a person. I say person because it started out as a lady and then it turned into Luke Fagenbusch. I can't remember if I have mentioned this or not, but me and Luke are doing a podcast together and it's all over the place. We were supposed to be doing it for a company that was asking us to do a podcast. And by us, I mean they asked him, and then he asked me. So they have no idea the kind of incongruent, non-consistent bullshittery that they've signed up for by involving me in their podcasting project. I don't even know if they know I'm involved. And also, I'm not a recognizable name. Like, I pretend in my own brain, like, people know who I am and people know what I am about. But there's, like, maybe 12 people that have any semblance of a clue as to how bullshit of a person I am. There's a lot of bullshit in this episode. Sorry, Mom. Everyone's posting. Oh, no, I'm not done talking about dreams. Before we get off on more tangents without a point. Yeah, the most recent one. Just last night, I had a wonderful dream where I was back working in one of my favorite jobs, Impellizzeri's Pizza down in Louisville, Kentucky. Shout out. Your pizza's gone to shit over the years. I was back in that kitchen, and it was way too full of people. I mean, like, that kitchen usually ran on a Friday night with no more than like 6 people in the kitchen. And there was a lot more than that in there. Now that I think about it, I think the dream kitchen was way bigger than it is in real life, because there's no way that you could fit 30 people in that tiny little kitchen. It's about the size of my bedroom, and my bedroom's not that large. Think about it, you know, a couple of tables, a stovetop burner, 2 pizza ovens, and 6 people. It was pretty cramped in there. And yet somehow there's 30 people all strewn about from my past. There was a guy in there, Scott something? Mr. Scott? I think his name was Mr. Scott. He was somebody that worked with my high school marching band. Don't know why he was there. He was never even in Louisville, Kentucky, that I know of. Maybe he ate there once, and I'm just, you know, gleaning that from his psychological energy. No idea. Also, weird fact, the restaurant was not ran by the people that ran it. It was ran by my current boss. Why? Why is that a thing? The only thing that made sense in the dream is I knew that I hadn't been there in a long time. And people were looking at me and saying, "Oh, it's so good to have you back. Welcome back. Do you think you can remember how to do this?" And in my head, I remember thinking, "No, I haven't been here in years." But I lied. And I said, "Yeah, I can totally make breadsticks," which was probably closer to the truth. They're not that hard. But then again, I mean, nothing in a pizza kitchen is that hard, and yet it gets stressful sometimes. I never understood that. You're just making pies, man. You're just making sweet, sweet pizza pies. It's not that difficult, and yet it was very stressful. The dream was super stressful. I kind of pretended to know what I was doing, and every time I thought I knew what I was doing, I was like, "Oh, wait, no, that's not how we do things here. That's how we do things in a warehouse." I was just stacking boxes, and people are like, "What are you doing? Make dough!" It was very stressful. But that's kind of the pattern that I've been in lately. All of my days off where I'm not working, I don't sleep super well throughout the night, and then Leah goes to work, and usually I'm an idiot and I park in the driveway behind her, so I have to get up, which is another terrifying thing, because I wake up to the sound of her going, "Hey, you gotta move, I'm running late." Great way to put on sweatpants backwards, really. And so I go and I move my car and I come back inside and I eat 3 bowls of Raisin Bran, and then I fall back asleep on the couch. That's the pattern, okay? And it's during that time that I have these really weird dreams. And some of you may be putting the dots together and saying, like, "Well, I don't really think it's the lack of marijuana making you have crazy weird dreams. It's probably the fact that you are bran loading. You're eating so much fiber and then just falling asleep, and your whole body is just like, we don't know how to process all of this." And so your brain kind of goes into psycho mode, and I just dump right into REM sleep, and I have these crazy dreams. It's a lot of fun. I don't appreciate any person that is posting their senior pictures on Facebook right now. All of you can go eat a bunch of rocks and jump in a river, okay? I don't like it. I don't like it. It's weird to me. Nostalgia usually just makes me sad, and it's not like a sadness where I'm like, "Oh, I miss the good old days." That's not it at all. I just miss the days where my body didn't hurt. That's it. Those days weren't that good. Nothing exciting happened. It was just a wash of like one mediocre experience leading into the next, which is exactly what my life is now. It's not, but my body didn't hurt as bad. My knees didn't crack. I didn't have this weird like spare tire wrapped around my hips that just keeps getting bigger every time that I think about it. I used to be thin, man. I used to be so thin. I used to be dangerously thin. I went and I found the picture of me where I was at my thinnest. I'm 6'3". There is no part of me that should ever weigh 135 pounds. At 6'3" on a medium frame, oh, but I say that I shouldn't do that, and I say that I shouldn't be that thin. But let me tell you, I looked good. All right. I looked real good. I could slap on like, you know, a little Spaniard mustache goatee combination, and it actually looked like it fit my face. I do that now and people are just like, "Do you need a wash? Why are you dirty?" And then if I try and grow that facial hair out longer so that it actually looks right, it just ends up looking like pubes. Long, stringy, curly pubes hanging off of my chin and around my sideburn areas. And then I have a mustache that clearly says, do you want ice cream? I just don't grow facial hair well. But back then, it looked okay. I miss being thin. I miss being a gangly guy. It was fun for me. I enjoyed being the weird, wiry one, you know? And now I'm desperately reapproaching husky, which is exactly what I looked like in my senior pictures. My senior pictures did not turn out well, okay? I went out to get senior pictures with my high school girlfriend's mom and my high school girlfriend. So, like, two-thirds of my senior pictures are just, like, me in a shirt that didn't quite fit right and a fedora that definitely was too small. And then her around my arm or under my arm or around my waist or under my butt. I sat in her lap. It was ironic and fun at the time. And the rest of the pictures, I'm just like, why did I wear shorts that day? On top of all of these horrible wardrobe decisions, I wore shorts so I could show off just how thick my tree trunk legs were. So please stop posting senior pictures. You're making me feel bad about my body in 2008. And I'm sure, that's not your problem. And I shouldn't demand you to stop doing something. Maybe you are a nostalgic person. Maybe you enjoy looking back on the past and remembering the good old days. If high school was the good old days, you didn't do much in college. I have a bunch of pictures and videos of stuff that I did in college. And I was like, well, that was fun. Those were some good times. I enjoyed my time in college. I had a lot of fun. Both ends of the spectrum, because, you know, I went to Bible college, as most of you know, very restrictive, you know, community there. We had a curfew. Guys and girls were separated into different dorms. And then every weekend, I would hop across town to the Catholic campus where I would involve myself in all forms of debauchery. Just that information there, you know, you would logically assume like, oh, okay, he's Catholic now because he thinks it's more fun. Nope. I just like to party with them. Catholics know how to party. Are you kidding me? We didn't have like sacrificial, whatever. We didn't have wine in church, all right? We had grape juice and nasty crackers. And then I started hanging out with some Catholic people and their barbecues had beer. And it was like, well, why is this potluck so alcoholic? And they're like, this is what we do. This is the way. I dig it. I mean, if you're going to heap that much guilt on a person, you may as well give them a release for that guilt, you know? And I'm not talking about you know, where you go into the little box and the priest is on the other side of the screen door listening to all your problems and he tells you to drink 7 Bloody Marys or whatever the fuck they say. Sorry, Mom. I'm talking about alcohol in general. Just let them drink. It's not a problem. Religion's a fickle thing for me. It's funny because like I came from a very religious family, Southern Baptist, just steeped in guilt, almost like you think they're Catholics or something, but they're like elitist because they're like, well, we don't have to go through a pastor to get our sins absolved. We get it right from the source. That's right, baby. We're right on Jesus's tit, getting that sweet, sweet, sacrificial, sin-admonishing milk. This analogy fell apart immediately. So this is all just a huge, giant loop that I'm going through just to talk about my new favorite televangelist. But Lauren, you don't seem to actually believe in God. Why on earth would you have a favorite televangelist? I've actually had several favorite evangelists over the years because I think they're hilarious. My first favorite televangelist, I can't remember his name, but he struck people and healed them with his hands, and that is hilariously insane. Just the idea that someone would come to a pulpit, they'd get smacked in the forehead, and it's like, oh, my fever broke. It's like, nah, you broke a hip because you went down hard. Can you heal my hip now that my fever's broken? Nope, one healing per touch. Get in the back of the line, Grandma. I don't remember that guy's name, but one of the main reasons that I fell in love with him, I think it was like Benny Hill or Benny... No, that's not right. That's a British comedian that did everything in fast motion. Or is it? I don't know. I'm bad with names. But this guy was actually like... I think he was Indian? And I'm talking about like, you know, the country over in Asia, not Native American. I'm not even sure. He could have been Pakistani for all I know. All I know is that he looked very tan and clearly wasn't Anglo-Saxon. Is that what I'm trying to say? I'm treading water here. Listen, he was a guy that he soaked up money. Is what he did. He used religion to soak up money because he made people feel better about themselves. And he made profit off of it. It was a super lucrative system. I'll smack you, and instead of you charging me with assault, I'll give you not only 10% of everything that I own, because that's what God calls for in the tithe, but I will also give you more than that, because that will make me a better Christian? Doesn't make any sense. But this guy, he's like symbol. He had a marketing team for his church, obviously, because that's the way of Christ. And his marketing team had him a little logo that was a dove, right? Symbol of purity and peace. And there were many times that Jesus pulled a dove out of a hat. We all remember that noise, right? And his little logo was sewn into his outfits, which looked sort of somewhere between like sex guru and yoga master. That's what his like outfits were. He didn't typically wear like, you know, a suit and tie. He just wore these just like short collared, I don't know, suits. I don't know what to call them. They're weird. They're not weird. They're just not like a standard, like Mad Men style suit and tie, Dapper Dan look. And right over his left breast would be that little dove sewn into the suit with gold thread. And I don't mean the color. I mean literal gold. Oh man. What a wonderful way to show how much good you're doing with all of your followers' fucking money. Sorry, Mom. So anyways, that was my first favorite televangelist. I have a new one. Oh, I don't want to mess this up. I want to get his name right, so forgive me while I look this up. He is one of the, God. And some of you may already know about this guy because he's kind of gotten popping off on the YouTubes. He is, what is his name? Hold on, I'll get there. You just relax your little cervix. His name is Ken Copeland, okay? Ken Copeland, he's my new favorite televangelist. And very similar to why I fell in love with that first televangelist, someone made fun of him on YouTube. He just did a wonderful parody video. They took a bunch of footage of Benihana's, or whatever his name was, the little gold dove guy. They took a bunch of footage of his sermons, and they dubbed it over Let the Bodies Hit the Floor. You remember that song? Let the bodies hit the floor. Let the bodies. It's one of the best things I've ever seen in my life, because like he's got people, he's smacking them, they're falling down. It's so on the nose and perfect. I fell in love with the guy, and I started watching his sermons, not for like, you know, any sort of religious benefit, but I was just like, well, maybe lightning will strike twice, and I will see something that happens that gives him, that gives me a little bit of internet fame. That's right. Everything I do is for my own selfish gains. Get used to it. Anywho, Ken Copeland is also kind of popped off on YouTube because he recently did a sermon about COVID-19 in which... the wonderful people at WTF Bra, that YouTube channel, they're known for doing remixes, right? They take somebody, whether it be a YouTube person or someone that showed up on the news or like a debate from political parties, and they remix it into something magical. Those were super popular, I don't know, like 8 years ago or something like that. It was just like, oh yeah, you got to listen to the remix version of it. No. Have you seen the remix version of it? No. Check out that remix version. They fell out of favor, you know? It's kind of like you've seen one, you've seen them all. They're very formulaic, but this one popped up on my Facebook feed and I fell in love with it. Number one, that beat is dope. It slaps as hard as the intro to this podcast. But just it's one of those magical moments where it's like, okay, this is done really, really well. And I don't know if I could live my life without it anymore. I get obsessed about things. I mean, I don't know if I've talked about this on the podcast or not, but there's a song that Jack Black wrote with Nick Jonas promoting the new Jumanji movie. I've probably already mentioned this, but it's something that me and my girlfriend listen to on repeat when we get drunk together. It's amazing. It's so good. If you just type in the words Jumanji into the YouTube, you'll find it. I mean, Jack Black went on the whole like promotion tour where he's on late night TV talking about these things, and he did it multiple times on multiple shows, just singing it a cappella. And it's such a visceral thing. Like, it hits you right in your keister, and it stays there, and it lingers with you. Just like Leroy Jenkins, if anyone gets that reference. YouTube has this weird power of just like, I don't know, it's something that songs used to do. We called them earworms, you know? They would just burrow their way into your cerebellum and then nap there for like 6 years. And then suddenly they would wake up and they would bother you because you had to hear it again. These have that same effect on me. I don't know why I'm over-explaining the concept of viral videos. Everyone knows how this shit works. Sorry, Mom. But like this one particularly, it's too perfect. I'm
Then sang Moses and the children of Israel this song unto the Lord.
How can you not love that? How can you not just like let that burrow its way into your brain and just like, all right, well, that's my life now. It's Ken Copeland rapping about COVID-19. It sounds like someone took like a Tech 90 style beat, and it's just, I don't know, it just makes me so happy to listen to that. I showed it to Leah and she was just like, why are you bothering me with this? That's a minute and a half. I'll never get back of my life. And I'm like, you play Animal Crossing. That's all just time you can't get back. I actually really like Animal Crossing. I shouldn't use that as an example to deter her opinions about how I waste my time. But I fully recognize that Animal Crossing is a waste of time. It's, you're not doing anything. There is nothing being accomplished there whatsoever. And now all you're doing is collecting eggs. Look up some Animal Crossing memes if you don't believe me. It's all eggs now. But I digress. I hate people that say that. I digress. No, you're going to die in the grass because I'm going to shoot you because you just said I digress. I have a problem with anything that doesn't feel unique, that feels derivative and generic. I hate it. It just speaks. It's like, why are you even attempting to be creative? Because creativity is not, you're supposed to be making something new. You're supposed to be making something unique, or at least something that speaks to your soul. And if you're just copying something that someone else did, it doesn't speak to your soul. With that being said, I want to make my own COVID-19 rap. I want to take Ken Copeland's voice and I want to do my own versions. I want to make an entire EP and every song will be a different genre and it will be the exact same lyrics because it's just going to be Ken Copeland's COVID-19. Like, he goes on and says that, like, this virus hates heat, which is super ironic because, like, isn't hell hot? So is he trying to damn the virus to hell or what? Like, by that logic, COVID-19 and Christians have a lot in common. Sorry, Mom. I think that deserves a sorry, Mom, directly. I just hope that people keep making cool things. I'm really bad at creating content, but I'm real good at soaking it up. Oh man, I love it. And YouTube is my jam. I don't know why I like, it took me so long to get on the YouTube train. I think it's a quality thing because like YouTube used to just be like garbage, you know, it was grainy videos that were barely intelligible. And occasionally you would come across someone that was like, oh snap, that's like real talent. That's like not even just like derivative clickbait bull nonsense. That's actual real talent. And his name is Bo Burnham. He's got a very nice career that started on YouTube. But I mean, he also, you know, he continually worked at it constantly, and he was a unique voice, and he was very talented musically, and then he just started working in comedy clubs. I'm pretty sure I have talked about him as well. Is there anything new to talk about? Well, I'll tell you what, there definitely is, because that's right, you guessed it, the only returning segment on Lauren's podcast, it's Lauren's Learning Corner.
Come along and learn with him. You could just look it up yourself, but he's gonna read an article he found on Facebook.
Alrighty, this wonderful article comes from Medium.com in their online publication known as The Startup, and this was written by Barry Davret. It's Barry. He entitles this article, Why Smart People Believe the Dumbest Things. I have no idea what this is about. I didn't plan this out. I'm bad at preparing for things that I decide to do 12 minutes ago. But here we go. Why Smart People Believe the Dumbest Things. The article begins. My wife barged into my office demanding help in a panic-stricken voice. Wow, that sounds like the opening to certain Brazzers videos, am I right? She suspected that our 21-pound dog might have swallowed a remote control. Sounded completely ridiculous. Barry said, it's impossible. He would choke on it. And she replied, we can't find the Fire Stick remote anywhere, and somehow it just changed something on the TV. At that point, Barry relaxed, figuring someone had sat on the couch cushion and inadvertently pressed a button. 20 minutes later, they still couldn't find it. Barry started to worry. We heard the clicking sound on the television, the kind you hear after you select or scroll through something with the Fire Stick remote. He started to suspect that something in the dog's stomach caused a button to activate. He couldn't believe it. The dog had swallowed a remote control. It should not be possible, he thought. But I couldn't ignore the growing evidence. We tore the house apart and found nothing. It was absolutely missing. He was sure of it. We called the vet, he says, ready to bring the dog in for a procedure that would have cost us a small fortune. Now, in a last-ditch effort, I rechecked the couch cushions. This time, I felt a slight bulge in the cushion. I unzipped the covering and stuck my hand inside, and sure enough, I pulled out the Fire Stick remote. I have no idea how a remote made its way inside a couch cushion, though I'm sure it was one of my kids. Crisis averted, he writes. We laughed about it 10 minutes later. How can a small dog swallow a remote control? It's impossible. This silly event proves something that we forget too often. We can believe almost anything under the right circumstances. I like this article. I don't know about y'all, but I'm already invested. Here we go. Barry continues, you've probably believed a few things in your past you'd be embarrassed to admit today. We like to make fun of the delusional, the ones who believe in outlandish theories. Obama is an antichrist. Sorry, Mom. The government puts fluoride in our tap water to control the population. The earth is flat, and etc. Then there are the idiots of history who bought into tyrants for reasons which seemed incomprehensible to the rest of the world. And finally, there are reasonable people who believed a small dog could swallow a remote control and activate it while it was in his stomach. But why? How could we be so gullible? How could I be so naive? We can laugh at the genuinely absurd, like the flat earthers, but how do reasonable people, smart people, believe stupid things? We reason based on imperfect information, but we believe we're acting on perfect information, or at least good enough information. You can argue that we seldom have access to complete information. Russia, am I right? And to wait for that moment would be pointless. That's a valid point. But when we act on incomplete information, we are more likely to make poorer decisions, deliberate with faulty logic, or connect the dots in a way that wouldn't make sense with more complete data. Our modern society has worsened this tendency. We draw conclusions about complex issues from Twitter updates and sound bites without waiting for the story to play out. The momentum builds into a frenzy, and we find ourselves in a mob mentality, suspending all judgment. Now let's pause there. Does anyone disagree with this fact at this point? What he's stating right here is that people just take little tiny bits of shit and they're like, well, the turd is shaped like this, obviously. It happens all the time. I do it constantly. I try not to. I try to keep an open mind, but so often I jump to conclusions based on the information that I have because I can't fathom in that moment that anything else could be added to give me a larger picture of what's going on. It's super basic, and yet we do it all the time. Let's continue. We're motivated. You hear the term confirmation bias throw around as an explanation to why people believe things in spite of proof to the contrary. It's almost become a punchline on the podcast circuit. Sorry, Barry, you just became a punchline on my podcast circuit. Yeah. There are over 47 million references to it on Google. Well, here I thought I was going to be talking about something unique, and Barry's telling me that there's 47 million da-da-da-da-da on da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh well. If you haven't heard of it, confirmation bias is the tendency to search for, interpret, and favor information in a way that confirms your beliefs or hypotheses while discounting alternative possibilities. Basically, you're just looking for answers that already solidify what you think. You only want information that agrees with what you're already saying. Oh boy, okay, we got to pause here to talk about something very interesting. No, we're not going to pause here. I'll get to it at the end. Hey, remind me in 20 minutes that I had an idea. You're not as smart as you think you are. According to aged wisdom, there are three types of people in the world. Number one, there are smart people who are too arrogant to admit they're wrong. Not me. Number two, there are dumb people who think they are smart. Like their intelligent brethren, they're too arrogant to admit that they're wrong. Not me. And then there are people who have accepted their failability. Well, that can't be me because I don't have any failability. I'm almost 48 years old. This is Barry, not I. I'm finally at the point in my life where I can admit something painful. I'm not as smart as I thought I was. I'm not there yet. Maybe I'll get there when I'm 48, but definitely not when I'm 30. My plans and theories never play out the way that I predict. I draw conclusions based on information I thought was ironclad. Things I was sure of in my 20s and 30s have turned out to be incorrect. And worse, I have held on to erroneous beliefs due to confirmation bias. I can't be the only one with an inflated view of their intelligence. Yeah, you're not the only one, Barry. I guarantee it. There's others. There's so many of us. We should start a club and then we can just, you know, form our own echo chamber where we just, you know, double down on idiotic beliefs all day in our own little Masonic temple. This is how the next section is entitled Evolution Works Against Us. In Ben Goldcare's book, Bad Science, he titles one of his chapters, Why Clever People Believe Stupid Things. Oh, well, it sounds like someone wrote a derivative article based on a chapter in somebody else's book. What's up with that, Barry? Some of which I already covered, and three of the reasons that he cites stick out to me. We see casual relationships where there are none. Bad science is the obvious example, but you see this play out everywhere from science to politics and even the more comical. I did a rain dance, and it rained 2 hours later. Therefore, my rain dance caused it to rain. Yeah. That's a bit of a stretch, and if you're out there dancing, trying to get rid of COVID-19, or maybe you're just screaming sermons into a television, that's definitely not going to help. The guy literally says he blows the wind of God. Sorry, I'm doubling back on idiocies. We see patterns where there is only random noise. False pattern recognition is part of being human. It was an evolutionary advantage back in the hunter-gatherer age. It was better for survival to think the rustling in the bushes was a predator rather than the blowing wind. Yeah, that makes sense. That absolutely makes sense. But the cost of being wrong was negligible. In today's world, we constantly connect the dots even when they bear no relationship. German neurologist Klaus Conrad coined the term apophenia. The science of seeing patterns or connections in random or meaningless data. The experience of seeing patterns or connections in random or meaningless data. Apophenia. That's a fun word. Look at that. We're learning together. It explains why we see patterns in clouds, images of the Virgin Mary on the walls of a subway station, and why we create conspiracy theories from anecdotal, unproven information. Apophenia. See, now that's going to be a fun word. If you ever hear somebody that's just like spouting out some real like tinfoil hat nonsense, you can just start muttering apophenia under your breath. And they're like, what is that? It's what I'm having for lunch. Don't worry about it. What do we do about it? Much of our struggles originate in I am all over the map with my words today. I apologize. I need a drink of water. Give me 3 seconds. Ready? It was more like 4. Take 7. Much of our struggles originated in evolutionary development. Do we have any hope of changing? I don't think we can change our nature, but we can, in some instances, correct ourselves and fight our instincts. Reserve judgment, decision-making, and reasoning for non-emotional states. Oh, that's a fun one. Don't make decisions when you're upset or like hyper emotional. That's a very good one. I like that. It's difficult to remember this in the heat of an argument or an emotional situation, but you can revisit decisions and judgments later when you have had time to decompress. Accept that you can be wrong about most anything. Most folks go their entire lives without coming to terms with their cognitive limitations. Joe Exotic. Am I right? If you recognize your fallibility, you'll adapt to new information instead of rejecting it or twisting it to suit your pre-existing beliefs. If it pains you too much to admit you're wrong, start by saying to yourself, I might be wrong about this, but... See, that way, admitting you might be wrong makes it easier to recognize later if new information contradicts your own beliefs. Okay, so this is something that I realized in my early 20s that I really hate about people. People that speak definitively. I always put my car in park. Why is it rolling down the street then, Greg? I never disrespect my elders. Well, then why is your mother crying? You can't speak definitively because you're not God. All right, that's my little rant about that. Always question yourself. Do you see patterns where none exist? Did you make a judgment based on incomplete information? Did you conclude something based on a faulty cause and effect relationship? You won't remember to do this when you're emotionally charged up, but it's helpful to do this once you've composed yourself. Oh, God. So yeah, that's the whole article. That was fun. What's my takeaway from that? Every single person needs to read that article at least once a month, including myself, because that's a very easy concept to forget, man. You get all hopped up on your own ideologies, and you get cemented in what you believe because it makes you emotional. And that's with anything. Whatever is your God are the things that are going to make you emotional. If your God is relationships with other people, then how those people are treated is going to make you amped up. If your God is religious dogma, then the observation of that dogma and the practice of those beliefs is what's going to get you hopped up. All of these things get wrapped up into politics, and that's why, you know, politics are such a vehement thing to discuss, because every single ideology and belief is wrapped up in the political structure. How is our country going to be ran? Well, that comes boiled down to what you believe in. How are we treating its people versus how are we treating its people's beliefs versus how are we treating its animals versus how are we treating the earth that the country is literally on? All of that. All of that is literally just like, well, what does this politician believe? And what is this politician going to do about it? And what's this guy going to do? And what's that girl going to do? And what's this congressperson going to do? That's why politics are so hard, because it is literally just a broad scope of you doubling down on your own idiocies. You find somebody that is preaching the things that you believe in, and you're like, that's my person. I'm voting Democrat down the bird, because that's how it's going to work. I hate politics, and I hate people that speak definitively. And politicians, they like to speak definitively. You know why? Because if they say something definitive that falls in line with the majority that they're trying to encapsulate, then they're going to have those people follow them. But on the flip side of that coin, politicians also don't like to speak definitively because they don't want to ruffle anyone's feathers too much. You know what I mean? There are the people that they have already decided are not going to vote for them, and those are the people that they don't care if they piss off. And then there's the people that they desperately want to get a hold of for their vote, and those are the people that they don't want to piss off. And so they're playing this wonderful snake dance of, please like me, I will do anything for this popularity contest. And I could talk about that nonsense all day, but that's going to do it. We're going to wrap up Lauren's Learning Corner just like that.
Thank you so much for your time. Lauren's Learning Corner's over. Hopefully you learned something, or maybe not.
Hey, did you remember when I said remind me that I have a thing to talk about? Yeah. So the concept of like doubling down on your ideologies and confirmation bias. That's the actual term that they keep using instead of doubling down on your ideology. I came like full up against this in a Facebook comment section recently. And, you know, it's a friend of mine. And I say friends with quotations because he's a comedian. And like, I don't have comedians at my house to like, you know, help express my dog's anus because I don't have a dog. But my point is that like, I'm only superficially close with other comedians for the most part. Even though I really like them, I just don't spend a lot of time with them. And so there's not a whole lot of like opportunities to strengthen relationships or what have you. But that being said, sometimes a comedian will do something and you find out that, oh, so even though that person seemed like a really nice person and they ran a really good show out of a wine and cheese bar, they're kind of a douche. And that's what happened recently. There's a few people, you know, comedians can be very divisive. They can be downright assholes, and you either love them or hate them, just kind of like politicians. But there are certain comedians that it doesn't matter whether you like them or you love them or you don't care about them or you hate them. It's unifinally understood and accepted as like, that's a sweet person. That's a nice person. That person would do no other person any harm whatsoever. And therefore, I use those types of people as gauges for other people. It's like, oh, well, if you can't have a civil conversation in a comment section with this individual, that probably means that you're a bag of rocks that needs to be thrown in a river. And that's kind of what I came up across recently. I don't want to say any names because I don't want to throw anybody under the bus or anything. But we'll just say that the person, the nice person, the person that is unifiably is absolutely without question known to be a nice, sweet person. We'll call them Joel McHale. Okay, so Joel McHale posted something about an opinion, and someone else hopped in the comments section, very obnoxiously, if I do say so myself. And we'll call person, you know, the aggravator, we'll call him Satan. Just for, I mean, don't read into that, but it's Joel McHale versus Satan. And Satan was, well, let's just say it took me over an hour to go through all of the comments. The original post only had 9 words in it, and there were, I think, 117 total comments under the thing. And it wasn't any, the whole argument was literally just a group of people telling Satan, hey, we don't disagree with what you're saying, but you're being a dick about it. And Joel McHale was one of the nicest people in the section. Joel McHale was just a wonderful individual. At one point, he did say one nasty thing and then immediately apologized about it. When he was like, hey, you're right. I shouldn't have called you a name. I apologize. Things got escalated, and I threw a name out there. I'm sorry. The guy just kept going and just kept hammering on things and being a self-righteous asshole. Satan is a self-righteous asshole. That's what I'm trying to get at. Sorry, Mom. Wait, do I have to apologize to that? I'm pretty sure she thinks that Satan is a self-righteous asshole. I'm getting muddied. So yeah, the whole ideology of like confirmation bias is pretty self-evident. So if you happen to have a friend of yours that posts a lot of religious beliefs or political opinions or just anything that seems preachy for whatever reason, here's a clue as to whether or not you can unfollow that friend without feeling bad. Okay, this is what I've discovered. Go to their page or what have you and see the things that they post and go into the comments and see how many times they're posting on their own post. If you're commenting 3 or 4 times on your own post without anyone else interacting, that's sociopathic behavior. There's absolutely no reason for that. If you are trying to add a point to the original point that you made, edit the post. Go in and add the information underneath what you already wrote. It's not that hard. It's not difficult. Why on earth do you feel the need to make multiple comments under your own BS? Everyone should hate Satan. That's the point that I'm trying to get at. I don't have a point. I was pretending to have a point. I don't have a point. It's just drama. And as much as I would like to think that I'm a person that rises above drama and doesn't engage because drama only leads to dramatics, I'm not that person. I love reality TV. I love when people punch each other in the face. I loved The Tiger King every last second of it, except for that last episode with Joel McHale, the actual Joel McHale, not my friend on Facebook that I was calling Joel McHale earlier. And the only reason I didn't like it is because it was formatted differently. It wasn't like a real Tiger King episode. It was just interviews, online video interviews, which I don't like that. Anyways, like if you're going to interview a person, it's the same reason that I don't do phone interviews on the podcast. They sound bad. The flow of conversation is very jolted. It's staggering in a bad way. It feels disjoined. There's no conversational rhythm there. I don't care who you are. If you're interviewing a person and it doesn't sound like, you know, one person is genuinely trying to get to know the other person, if there's no semblance of it being a conversation whatsoever, and it's literally just question, answer, I hate that. It's so robotic and stupid. And that's why I didn't like the newest episode of Tiger King. I don't know what you guys are doing. I mean, if you're working, just hang in there. Like if you haven't been completely quarantined and out of work, hang in there. Working sucks right now because I'm having stress dreams about getting coronavirus and all these other things. Like it's very it's bad. I don't want to leave my house. I went to Kroger the other day to get some cereal. And it was weird. I found myself like holding my breath and stuff. It's just such a strange time. So if you're out there and you're still working, especially at a poop job, oh my goodness, if you're still working at a poop job, you're my hero. Like my job isn't complete poop. Like I make a decent living. It's not grand money by any means, but I'm not making minimum wage at a freaking McDonald's. Those people are my heroes right now. And it's so stupid because like you're seeing commercials and I'm hearing commercials on the radio and on TV, on YouTube of like these corporations thanking their employees. And it's so worthless. It's such a worthless ideology to be like, our essential employees are the backbone of America. Thank you. Don't thank them, man. Give them hazard pay. I'm incredibly fortunate. My boss has already talked about like taking the stimulus package that she's potentially going to get as a small business and not spending it on anything other than in case one of her employees gets coronavirus, she's going to continue to pay them their freaking paycheck out of that as like a medical leave. Like, here, you're sick. You're on the front lines. Let me continue to pay you this level of unemployment because you're going to be out of work for several weeks because you have coronavirus. And then whatever's left over when all of this finally ends, she's going to take the rest of that stimulus package and just spread it around to everybody as hazard pay. She doesn't have to do that. She could spend that money on so many different other things in her business. She's a wonderful boss. I'm incredibly fortunate. Not everyone is, because they're working for some idiot that decided to open up at McDonald's in 1999 and he quit caring about it 10 years ago. So just be nice when you're out there, you know, don't get in a huff. Like I get really irate if things don't go my way in a fast food drive-thru. It's one of my sins that I have to live with, but just don't do that. Don't be mad at people doing their job right now. Just don't do it. Just de-escalate your own emotions and just deal with whatever pettiness that you have because the person at Kroger had to keep you from scanning your own stuff at the U-scan for 2 seconds just so they could wipe it down with disinfectant. Don't get upset at them. Thank them. And if you're not currently observing social distancing, eat rocks and jump in a river. All right. I love you guys so much. Oh, that's going to do it. We're going to wrap it up. I might see you next week. I might skip another week. I might just do these every other week because that's when I have time. But who knows? I don't know what's going to happen. All I can tell you is that it's stressful. But hey, you know, we got TV. We got YouTube. We got podcasts. We got people, you know, movies that were supposed to come out in theater are being able to be downloaded. Like it's rough, but we're getting through. Just please don't assume that the apocalypse is going to happen because of this, because I'll quit talking to you. All right. Peace out. Love y'all. I should come. Okay. I really like how these episodes start. I really hate how they end. I would love to have like a you know, a period to put at the end of this month. That's not. Nope. That. Bye.